It's time to talk to Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, here today on the Sports Ticket. And his appearance is brought to you, as always, by the fine folks over at Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by, see Matt and Michelle, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them 738-5701. Brian, how's it going today on this Thursday?
Going well, my friend. Thanks for having me on, Wade.
Absolutely. Always glad to have you on every Thursday to talk KU athletics. And we certainly would like to talk about a W over Ohio, but it didn't take place this past weekend. And I know it's another disappointing loss for folks that follow the program. And I guess it really comes down to you just can't get in a big hole in the first half. And it seems like that's what KU's done the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, and 2 years in a row with Ohio. It was 25-0 a season ago in Lawrence, 18-0 in this particular season. And, you know, the way they fought back in the second and fourth quarters was admirable, but to play from 18 and 25 down is no way to play, especially on the road against the bowl team. You know, that's the thing we have to remember for those that are down and near out on these Hawks just 3 weeks in. Tap the brakes on piling off the bandwagon for just a second and realize that, while yes, we wanted to win and expected to win one of these two games against MAC teams, they're both bowl teams that, in Frank Solich and Coach Bonamigo's cases, have been doing this for a while at their respective schools, especially Solich, 13 seasons now, but have piled up consecutive bowl-type teams that have 22- and 23-year-old guys. And like some of these younger Kansas Jayhawks, it's still just not quite there yet. I believe in the talent. I believe in the direction of this coaching staff, and they're going to get there in time. But it was a situation where the offense kind of sputtered early, and the defense, you know, clearly from the first play from scrimmage when they give up the 63-yard run to Olette, kind of got popped in the mouth, and it was tough to get back up from that, you know, in the fashion that they expected to. But tip of the cap to Ohio, man. It's as good of a team as we thought they'd be, picked to win the MAC East. We just haven't quite seen the version of Kansas that we're all expecting to see, and hopefully, you know, there's no place like home, as Dorothy used to say, and that home cooking will be exactly what the doctor ordered for Kansas. The first two league games come at home. You got a bye week in between. You'd really love to see Kansas get one of these next two versus West Virginia and Texas Tech. And I feel they can. You know, I think we saw a Kansas team at home a year ago compete so well with teams like TCU, who they could have beaten had the field goal by Wyman been good, and obviously beat Texas, competed hard against Iowa State, right there losing that one by a touchdown. It's a team that I think played really well a year ago at home. And in theory, Wade, this team should be better than last year. They haven't lined up and played that way yet, but in many positions they should be. The glaring position in which they aren't is in the secondary, as they're a lot younger, and those guys are learning on the job as we speak. But in theory, this should be a better team. We just haven't quite seen it come together yet. I think Dana Holgorsen said it well this week, the West Virginia coach. He said it's clear to see the Kansas personnel is a lot better. The pieces just haven't quite settled into the form they're going to be just yet. And obviously no Kansas fan wants to hear that. You're right. We want to win yesterday. But, you know, you've got other coaches around the league pointing out the obvious difference in athleticism and talent that this roster has, the depth of it. That's clearly a good sign. It's not what you want to ultimately hear. You want to hear them ticked after they just lost to your team. But maybe that'll be the case one of these next 2 weeks. It just wasn't on Saturday.
Peyton Bender, the numbers haven't been too bad. He had lots of yards. He's thrown a lot of passes. I think it was 47 against Ohio, 30 of 47 for over 300 yards, two touchdowns. But the one interception, and that was a big, big interception because Mike Lee had just picked it off, and it looked like KU maybe would have some momentum. And then the very next play, he throws the pick. And we saw in the K-State game their quarterback, Jesse Ertz, make a couple of costly mistakes, and he's probably more experienced than Peyton Bender is. But those are the types of plays that you just can't have if you're going to pull off a win on the road.
Yeah, that was a real kick to the gut. And it was a play that, had he hit him in stride, you know, Steven might still be running. It was great to get Sims back. He had six catches for 60 yards in the first half. And that was their first early attempt at a second half hookup, a second half when they didn't get on the same page. And that one was 4 or 5 feet behind him. And, you know, you obviously need to put that ball where it needs to go. But I think Peyton, he clearly rebounded from that. I know David and I up in the booth kind of wondered, after seeing Carter Stanley in some running situations earlier in the game, after that pick, would Carter get more chances? But credit Coach Beatty. He stuck with him, and he was rewarded for sticking with him, because I thought Bender really got better down the stretch, and Kansas outscored Ohio 16-3 in the final quarter, and he kind of settled in. And I think if you're going to commit to one guy, that's what you got to do. You got to you know, give him a little bit of a rope, a little bit of a leash when it comes to making some mistakes. And, you know, Coach Meacham said last week that the thing that Bender has, you know, struggled a little bit with on occasion has been an erratic pass or two after seven or eight that are right on the money. And he compared it to a guy going through a layup line and making eight or nine layups in a row, and then the tenth goes over the backboard. And he said that to say that, you know, he's a really accurate passer, more passes than not, but then there'll be one wild one. And they're trying to figure out what gets into him on that one wild throw. But I think, you know, right now it's clear to see he's averaging 343 yards a game. He's spreading the ball around. He's not locking in on one particular guy. He's admitting that he needs to tuck and run in some instances when nothing's there. Sometimes he hangs on to it a little too long. That's probably the biggest criticism right now. But overall, you know, considering this is just weeks into his Kansas career for a guy that's, you know, played at the Pac-12 level for essentially half a season as a starter for Mike Leach, but was at JC ranks last year, all things told, he's doing pretty good. I told somebody the other day I thought maybe a BB minus over these first 3 weeks only because they haven't won more, and the pick total is a little bit higher than he liked. But it's going to get better. They're committed to him. But that doesn't mean they're not committed to Carter Stanley, too. They feel there's a change of pace that he can bring, and I think they've got a bigger package in mind to utilize him within the playbook this particular game. But you hit the nail on the head, Wade. You got to stay in the game early to allow your full game plan, you know, to come to fruition. Because when you get down in a three-score hole like they did at Ohio, suddenly you're in catch-up mode, and a lot of the things you plan to utilize, you can't. So hopefully we'll get a chance to see both quarterbacks, not because one of them's struggling, but because they feel like they've got a nice, you know, change of pace that Carter can bring in there. But to me, I think you can't give up on Bender based on a few wild throws. I think more than anything, we've seen a guy with arm talent that we just haven't had a whole lot of post-Todd Reising. And that's exciting. If he starts to harness that the way that Doug Meacham believes he will and the way I believe he will, I think you're going to see a Kansas quarterback that's very productive over these next 2 years.
Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, with us every Thursday, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt, huge Jayhawk fan, and Michelle at 118 North Mill in Beloit, or give them a ring at 738-5701. Now, defensively, certainly the team has not met maybe expectations that many people had in regards to the points they've allowed, the yardage they've allowed. And certainly one thing that stands out is the guy that is the poster child for the defense is Dorrance Armstrong. And he has not had a sack yet this year. And then they've got an injury on their defensive line, losing guy for the rest of the season. You can touch upon that here in a moment. But what does Kansas need to do differently to get more pressure on the quarterback and to improve that defense? You mentioned the secondary is young, a little inexperienced. They should get better. But what about getting more of a pass rush?
Well, Dorrance, you know, early in the season, seen a lot of double teams, and he's going to see double teams over the course of the year. There have been moments when I've wondered, is he completely healthy? Obviously, we saw him with a little bit of a stinger at the end of the Ohio game last week. But clearly, he is living life as a marked man and a guy that other offenses are targeting to take away and force other guys to beat him. And we've seen guys like J.J. Holmes step up in the midst of some of that attention thrown Dorrance's way. Daniel Wise, I think, in large part, has had a terrific start to the season. Certainly the first two games, he was as good as any defender we've had. But you're right, there needs to be more productivity there. And Dorrance would tell you that too. But I think we can't judge it solely based on statistics this season because of the extra attention that's going to be thrown at him. He's not going to have a 20 tackle for loss, 10 sack season like he had a year ago unless, you know, other guys start commanding double teams or other guys, you know, command, you know, single coverage to where he can man up on one side on a one-on-one type defensive play. So Dorrance, to me, is a guy that still affects plays, and he'll funnel the play into somebody else's arms. You just want to make sure that you're seeing a lot of that and you're rattling the cage of the quarterback and not allowing the opposing signal caller to have all kinds of time to throw, because that's where those two junior college corners and some of the youth you have in that secondary with a pair of sophomore safeties, that's where they're kind of on an island if you give it too much time. So even if Dorrance doesn't get the big sacks and the stats that were so glossy a year ago en route to a first-team All-League distinction and preseason defensive player of the year, he disrupts plays where other guys get the numbers. You want to see more of that and not a version of Dorrance that I think a week ago at times struggled to keep his footing on that turf in Ohio, where you saw several Jayhawk kick returners slip and stumble. Dorrance had that happen to him a few times. And there were other times when they weren't double-teaming him and he just wasn't able to get there like he normally would. I think we're going to see a better version of Dorrance provided he's healthy going forward. But just keep in mind, just because he doesn't have 20 and 10 in the TSL and sack department doesn't mean he's not having a great effect on the game. Sometimes it'll be somebody else that winds up with the highlight play or finishes off that quarterback for a sack, but the play came in.
Yep. Brian, are you there? Hey. There we go. There we go.
On the highway today.
There we go. We got you back.
And bumps along the highways of Kansas here. I apologize.
Hit a dead spot. Go ahead.
Well, I was just finishing up saying, you know, don't be disappointed with Dorrance if you don't see 20 TFLs, 10 sacks. There's plenty of times this season, and we've seen it already, where somebody else gets the credit for the TFL, but that play was funneled his direction because big number two was coming from the right edge.
Yep. West Virginia is the opponent coming up. West Virginia scored 56 and 59 points the last 2 weeks against East Carolina and Delaware State. Lost a tough one to open the season against Virginia Tech, 31-24. The thoughts and concerns going against West Virginia when they come to town on Saturday?
Well, I think the biggest concern you always think about with West Virginia is skill position speed. Remember when they first came in the league and Tavon Austin was out there just like a little human joystick, like a Dante Hall, mm-hmm. You know, running all over the field, stopping, starting, bursting, exploding. He was running back, receiver, kick return extraordinaire. Rams traded up two picks to get him in the first. And, you know, that was my first impression of West Virginia football. They had Stedman Bailey, too. And since then, they've had Kevin White, and all kinds of top five Big 12 receiver talent. And this year with Hills, you got a guy that's number two in America right now and receiving touchdowns 3 weeks. And so while maybe not as explosive as some of the previous guys, clearly a big-time talent, and they've got three or four options that on any given day could be Will Greer's favorite target. Greer is the quarterback to transfer from Florida who had to sit out a season because of an illegal substance he used for training purposes. As I'm told by Tony Caridi, the voice of the Mountaineers, he was okay to use it 1 year, and suddenly it was illegal the next. It's not like this guy was, you know, Jose Canseco roiding up or anything like that. He just was a little bit confused on a particular substance. And so ultimately it cost him a year. Ultimately he ends up transferring. But this is a guy who was a highly, highly rated quarterback coming out of high school. And we've seen already in the first 3 weeks of the season, two of the first 3 weeks he's been the Big 12 newcomer of the week. So they're going to pass it around a great deal, spread around, hand it off to the current Big 12 rushing leader in Justin Crawford, who's averaging over 7 yards a carry. And I think all that skill position talent, all that West Virginia speed is what concerns you the most. Because to be quite frank with you, Wade, they've not seen that type of speed these last 2 weeks. They've seen good teams, bold teams, absolutely. But they've not seen this caliber of skill position options like they're going to see. And so how the Kansas defense handles that will tell the tale dramatically Saturday's final score. Because West Virginia, I think, can be had defensively. They've got some talent there, but they're replacing eight starters, and really nine with one of their guys out of late. And so that's not that Kansas is going to just move the ball up and down the field. It will, but I do think the Jayhawks can post points. And I think it's so important that they post points early and play from out in front, or at least play neck and neck. You said it. I mean, you can't fall down in a 3-4 score hole regardless of where the game's at, regardless of who you're playing. It's just not a winning brand of football for KU. And I think for these Jayhawks, you know, it's imperative they get off to a good start this week. And hopefully we'll see them be able to match drive for drive with Greer and these Mountaineers, because they can pile up the points in a hurry. And with Dana Holgorsen, who's obviously got Texas Tech, Oklahoma State roots, I mean, he's a great offensive mastermind that's had nothing but good offensive talent in his day there. And I think this team is no different. So fully expect this thing to be a game played in the 30s and 40s, and hopefully Kansas can keep pace and be right there in the end to possibly pull the upset.
Well, I hope they can do that, and like you said, to get off to a good start would be key. The Kansas Board of Regents on Wednesday authorized the University of Kansas to spend $22 million, all from the Brian Haney Fund. I'm kidding. private donations, athletic funds to upgrade its baseball stadium and volleyball center. What could you, can you add anything to that? Because that's a pretty big investment, but it's all from private donations.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And you know what? I'm going to let our athletic director do the talking here, and it's going to come real soon. I can't say a whole lot more than that, but you know, that was something that came out a little bit before the main announcement. It's pretty imminent, and that's all I can say. But there are major upgrades coming to the University of Kansas. You know, we're back to July. You know, the news we're talking about involving football, but the specifics on that are soon to be headed your way. And I want that to be a moment to Dr. Zanger and Matt Beatty, who heads our Williams Fund. I want those guys to have a chance to tell that story because they've been working so hard behind the scenes with the movers and shakers in Kansas athletics. And we have such a fantastic alumni and donor benefactor base that is really passionate behind keeping up with the Joneses when it comes to the arms race and facilities and equipping our student athletes and coaches with everything they need to compete. And obviously, first and foremost, and it's about to come with football, which is really, really exciting. But you know what? The volleyball team has warranted expanding the Horse Center. They're only about 1,500 seats right now, and it's going to be exciting to see the new capacity and the video board capabilities they're going to have there. And baseball with Rich Price, man, I think his biggest legacy is going to be making Kansas competitive every year, but turning that particular ballpark from, you know, one of the worst in the league to one of the most beautiful parks and one of the most competitive facilities to recruit to because of all the amenities they have for their players in a cold climate baseball school. You know, he's got a lot of things to factor into his legacy, but I think Coach Price and what he'll be able to hand the keys off to the next coach, whenever that is, whether it's 4, 5, 6, 7 years down the line, that's going to be how we remember him because that ballpark is just night and day different from where it first was when he inherited it, when Roy Williams cut him his first check so he could have some outdoor batting cages down the left field line to what it's going to look like when this next project is done, man. I'll tell you what, he has really left his stamp. And obviously, he's the all-time winningest coach, too, in KU baseball history, and that should be number one on his legacy as well. But I think there's a footprint that he's left on that program. And really, Dr. Zanger, his legacy in facilities enhancements campus-wide in the 7 years he's been here is something that we should be really proud of. And so I'm going to let those guys give you specifics, not because I'm trying to hold back on you, but this is going to be an exciting day here real soon when we get a chance to hear from those guys. And I can't wait to have the rest of Jayhawk Nation rejoice and raise a glass for what's coming up real, real soon to your campus.
All right, time for the off-the-wall question, Brian. If you were, or you're going to be, a TV or movie star, what role or character would be perfect for you to play?
Wow. How about that?
I'll buy you some time here because that's off the wall. Makes you have to think quickly.
What would you choose? Clearly you thought about this.
Yes, I figured you might ask me that. Since I was compared to Tom Cruise because a girl had too much to drink and her boyfriend did as well at a bar in Pittsburgh, Kansas when I was in college, I always joked that Tom Cruise is my dad or my brother, whichever one you want to choose. And so I just watched Mission Impossible recently, and I have to think Ethan Hunt. That's the role for me because I live life on the edge, climbing rock walls and rock formations and all this other stuff with these cool glasses where I can watch video and then it self-destructs. That's me, man. So Ethan Hunt, Mission Impossible, that would be my perfect role.
I love it. You know, even before you said Tom Cruise, which I've heard you've been compared to, when I was visiting Glen Elder and Beloit over the summertime, you know, people thought that I was eating lunch with Tom Cruise. Before you even said that, for my own role, not because I look like him at all, because I don't, but just the character and the profession, when I saw Jerry Maguire as a kid, I wanted to be a sports agent. And I think if I ever had a chance to do something else and it wasn't Make-A-Wish Foundation, and I didn't have to have 8 years of law school, I'd be pretty decent at being a sports agent because I love representing these athletes when it comes to some of the charitable work that we do together. And I'm somewhat silver-tongued when it comes to making my convincing case and trying to, you know, prove a point when it comes to sports. So I think I could do that. I certainly think I would have the passion to hold the goldfish in a bag above my head and say, who's coming with me?
Yes.
And we've already got our ambassador of Kwan and Kwan Hampton.
Yes.
So give me the role of Jerry Maguire, not because I look anything like him, but because I could have some fun making a passionate pitch for a sports athlete to get all that he deserves. Because I think we do that every Thursday right here on your show, making a passionate sell for Kansas athletics. And we're still very passionate about KU football this fall. Hope I'm going to see Wade and everybody out there this Saturday morning at 11 because the Hawks need a 12th man if they're going to get this thing turned. And Saturday's going to be an exciting day, so I hope you guys will come out and join us at Memorial Stadium.
Well, we'll definitely try to do that, and just remember, if I do hit it big as a movie star or TV star, you can be my agent, okay?
I love it. I'll take 6% of that. Absolutely.
It won't be much. It won't add up, that's for sure. Hey, have a great call. What's that?
You could be Tom Cruise's body double. I'd take 6% of whatever that guy makes.
Well, you might come out ahead on that deal. I'll have to do the math when we get to that part. How's that?
Sounds good, man.
All right, buddy. Take care. Okay. Have a great call. We'll be listening on Saturday.
See you, pal. Take care. Right.
Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, the one and only, joining us, and his appearance is brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency, the DeFarm Home, Auto and Life, and Crop Insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Michelle, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.